You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Hello, and welcome to Curiosity Invited. My name is David Bryan, and today I will be speaking with Claire Berger. Claire Berger has a long career that started as a stand-up comedian. She was an acclaimed stand-up comedian for years. And then when she had children, she moved from doing stand-up on the road to being an audience warm-up comedian for many of the sitcoms on TV, most notably Seinfeld. And from there, when sitcoms stopped using studio audiences, she reinvented herself again as an author and a consultant for companies who wanted to make their workplaces more fun. And yeah, that does sound like a perfect job. She was an author as well. She's written 3 books that I know of, one called Tuscan Women Cook. It's a cookbook. Another that grew out of her consulting work, and it's called Funny Works, 52 Ways to Have More Fun at Work, which is what her consulting business was. And then most recently, I believe this past year, or maybe it was this year, 24, a book, an intriguing book, a memoir that is both a memoir and self-help book, which we'll be speaking about today. And it's called How Much is Enough? Getting More by Living with Less. She's a very fun person. We know each other from years ago, and I hope you enjoy it. So I give you Claire Berger on Curiosity Invited. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Curiosity Invited. And today I am here, as you just heard I gave you a proper introduction on a separate recording. I am here with Claire Berger. And as I said, Claire is among other things, she is an author now. And we'll talk just a little bit about how you got there because, you should all know, I know Claire from many years ago and haven't spoken in a long time. Well, that's not quite true. We spoke about 2 weeks ago, but prior to that, yeah. hadn't spoken really since her son's Sam graduated from the school that I worked at, and that was many years ago, at least 10.
Yeah, so, Sam's 34. So
maybe I'll get, oh my God, is that right? Sam is 34?
He's 34, yes. I know, I'm as shocked as you are, David, believe me.
Wow. The other thing you should know about Claire is that she laughs a lot and she makes people laugh a lot. Her first career, well, I don't know if that's true, your first career, but was as a stand-up comedian. And then, as I said in the introduction, and then went on to be an audience warm-up comedian. There must be a name for that, right?
It's warm-up. I was laughing at the Peter Tilden story where he said he got fired but then hired as a writer. But warm up to me was like, it's the unsung hero of the entertainment business. Very few people know about it. Right. It's a very cool job.
Yeah. I remember going, I don't know what it was, a taping of years ago. I went to one taping of one TV show. There was an audience. I was sitting in the audience and this total stranger came out and started talking to us. And it was like, I don't know who he was. He was hysterical. It's like, this is as good as the show.
I was the first woman, anyway. And I launched my warm-up career on the Tracy Ullman show a few years ago, where the Simpsons were born. So yeah,
the Tracy Ullman show. And then you did Seinfeld towards the end of your career.
No, smack dab in the middle. At that point, it was like, you know, sitcom heyday. And I worked on the first 4 years of Seinfeld, 9 years of Murphy Brown. Towards the end of my warm up was Mad About You reboot. That was just a couple of years ago. And I hadn't done stand up or warm up or anything. And Peter Tolan, the executive producer and showrunner, called me, and I had worked on a whole bunch of shows with him like 18, 20 years ago. And he's like, come on, do it. And I said, it's like walking on a tightrope without a net. I mean, I don't have an act anymore. He goes, look, it's all about empty nesters. You're an empty nester. Just tell your truth. And, you know, that's what I did. I talked about, you know.
Wait, so did you do the same thing each time?
No.
Because you got a new audience, so you didn't have to.
I mean, no, I was super improvisational. I worked on over 65 different sitcoms, David. I mean, they were all different. They had a different demographic. And my background is improv. I came from the Second City in Chicago. So I approached each warm-up opportunity as an improv exercise more than a nightclub experience, you know?
Wow.
And I think that's what made me better at it, because if I did the same thing every night, I would kill myself, you know? That would just be so boring. So I couldn't.
I think about that with like cover bands or something, you know, like the bands, I forget their names. We once had a cover band for the Beatles at one of our fundraisers for the school. And it was like, they were great. And then I thought, these are probably really fabulous, frustrated musicians who are constantly doing, you know, Sgt. Pepper.
But then they cash the paycheck, David. And that's not a bad thing.
Yes.
You know, we all figure out how to earn a living doing what we love. Well, you know, it's a living.
Yeah. Well, but that wasn't the motivation for writing this book, though, was it?
No.
And the book this is your third book, right? Am I correct in that? The cookbook.
Technically, yes. I was hired to write the content, not the recipes, for the Tuscan Women Cook cookbook during the pandemic, which really saved me. And I was writing for these Italian culinary immersion programs, Tuscan Women Cook and Italian Culinary Adventures. And Tuscan Women Cook was coming up with a cookbook. The Nonas, the local Nonas, did all the recipes. I just did all the content that went around it. So yeah, that was fun.
Right. It
took me to Italy in my imagination during the pandemic. It was great. Yeah.
and then you also wrote a book that grew out of your consulting work.
Right.
Or was it a preface to your consulting work?
No, it was an upsell, to be completely honest, at my speaking. So as the sitcom world kind of stopped shooting in front of an audience and my warm-up career died, I pivoted into humor consulting for businesses. And I started doing these incredible consulting and keynote speeches all over the country to the most unlikely people that you would ever think want humor, like the American Agri Women and the Nevada Miners Association and the International Perfumers. I mean, everybody is looking to figure out how to infuse more humor in their lives. And I was sort of in that unique position, having come out of the sitcom world, to pivot into consulting. And I wrote 50 Funny Works, 52 Ways to Have More Fun at Work, as an upsell for my speeches. It's not in print anymore, but it was, you know, it was a good upsell opportunity for me.
Oh my God. It's you know, it also sounds like the best job a person could have. So look, we want to hire you. We want to pay you to tell us how to have more fun. Does it get any better than that?
Yes, raising children.
I wonder
that's the best job.
I wonder if that. Oh, the best job is raising children. Well, yeah, maybe. Best job might be being around children all day and then sending them home to their parents.
That's right. Yeah, as a grandparent, I can tell you, you are correct. That is true. That's true.
Exactly.
Sure. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. But you know, David, I'm being completely sincere when I say that, because I've had a number of really wonderful jobs in my career, worked on great shows with lots of talented people. But I always designed my career so that I could be home with my kids. So all of my pivots and my reinventions were so that I could raise my children. That was always of paramount importance to me. And so I really look back at my career and all the twists and turns of it with a great deal of pride and no regrets, because I got to raise my kids. So that was my North Star for sure. Mm.
And you get to do that a lot. Let's turn towards this most recent book, and mm-hmm. and so, which is How Much Is Enough? Right. Getting More by Living Less.
Yeah, living with less.
Sorry. Yes, right.
Yeah,
and
yeah, I wrote the book.
Where did it come from?
Yeah, I wrote it because I made a huge leap and decided to leave everything I knew and loved in Los Angeles, including my dear son, Sam, to move to Brooklyn and start my life completely all over again at 64 years old to help raise my granddaughter, now granddaughters. My daughter and her son-in-law bought this very old brownstone and offered me an apartment in exchange for helping raise their then two-year-old. And I went for it. And I left everything I really, really everything I knew and loved. I never wanted to live in New York, never thought about it. I'm now here telling you I love New York. I'm a happy New Yorker. It's a great place to live. We live in Brooklyn in a little community called Park Slope. It's fantastic. But the first thing I did was join the YMCA, started swimming laps, and tried to kind of meet people and be in the world again. It was at the tail end of the pandemic, March 21. So there was pandemic protocol in place, and I'm swimming 30 minutes. You got to swim 30 minutes in your lane, and then you had to get out, give someone else a turn. And I made those 30 minutes count. They were fantastic. I got a great workout. Then the pandemic rules lifted. You could swim as long as you want. I'm swimming in the pool, and I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I kind of like swimming 30 minutes. I'm a happy 30-minute swimmer. Why am I like judging myself? You could swim more. You could swim 40. You should burn more calories. Oh, and then every lap I swim, David, I started thinking about my enough inventory. How much is enough? How much is enough exercise? What's the inventory we do as soon as we wake up every morning? Did I get enough sleep? Is there enough healthy food in the house? Am I going to have enough time to get everything I need to get done? Is there enough time for fun? Is there enough time for sex? Is there enough time to, you know, be with my loved ones? All of these things we say, we do, we judge. And I want to change that punitive message into a message of celebration, because it's okay to be good enough, right?
Yes. And okay, but the subtitle of the book is Getting More by Living with Less.
Right. So I moved to New York City into an apartment that is less than half the size of the home that I left in Los Angeles. I gave up my car. I stopped driving. I could only go shopping carrying what I could carry. I had to completely rejigger my life, re-alter everything that I knew and was used to. And I have so much more. I have so much more, David. And so I'm really living the thesis of this book. I am getting more by living with less. I have made this decision in my life to let go of a lot of the things, especially in Los Angeles, that we equate with success and with joy and abundance. It doesn't, those things really don't matter to me anymore. What matters is my quality of life, my time with my family, the opportunity to help raise my grandchildren, and to have the luxury of time to write this book, quite frankly.
Would you offer that message to younger people? Or is it a factor of, you know, we reach a certain time in our life,
right?
And the things that used to seem important seem less important. And or do you counsel your kids? Do you counsel Sam? And I don't know your daughter's name.
Jenna.
Jenna. But do you counsel them? Yeah. Yeah, Jenna. Yeah. You know, maybe you could do without. You don't have to. Or is it a function of the fact that we are no longer 22?
Well, let me answer that question, David, by telling you that no, I'm not 22, and I'm so happy to be 67. Can I just say that? I am so happy. I have no issue about telling my age. This is as good as I can look for 67, and I think it's just fine. You know, I feel that I could not have written this book any younger. I think I needed to be at this age and stage to really write this book. However, I have been approached by many people, various ages and stages of life, who have said they have really related to this book in very touching ways. I had one woman come up to me at Zibby's bookstore. I'm going to say she was in her late 20s. So she came up to me at Zibby's bookstore signing in Santa Monica. She said, I have a really hard time talking to my mother who lives in the Midwest. I love your book so much. I bought an extra copy for her. We are reading it together, answering the questions in the book together. And you've really created a template for our relationship. And we're able to really get so much more out of our time together because of the book. The book is an interactive memoir. I'd never heard of that. I had no pattern to form this from. But what I tried to do is kind of think about mashing up the idea of memoir and self-help. And so I tell my truths, and they're really true, and they're, some of them are really, really honest yes. to a fault.
They're and very honest, also, by the way.
Yes, they are. And I
I wasn't
what
sure if
thinking?
I
could, what chapter?
Wasn't sure if I could sit here and speak to you. I didn't know if I could sit here and speak to you without blushing after reading.
Was it the sex chapter? Was it marriage? What was it, David?
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, I know. But listen, isn't it great to have someone at this age and stage of life be so honest? And hopefully that honesty
totally.
Promotes self-reflection and introspection and discussion. And that's why there's questions and prompts and journaling ideas in every single chapter. And because 22 chapters isn't enough, the 23rd chapter is all the questions that come from all of the other chapters of the book.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity to communicate.
I found it a really interesting format. You know, I personally am not big on self-help books. And, yeah. but I just thought, well, because it's, as you say, it's very candid, honest. It is, you know, you feel like you're getting the story of this woman's life. Mm-hmm. And then there's this other dimension to it that is just like, oh, that's so interesting. Because, you know, it's as if somehow I'm sitting there with you and you're telling me this story and it's like, okay, now it's my turn. And, you know, I'm not sure I would do that, but I would probably do that in conversation, but it's not what you think of as a self-help book. So it's great. It's a really good thing set up like that. I like it.
Well, like thank it. You. I think it's important to shake up
and laugh in a lot of places.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's shake up the traditional publishing model that your ideas as a writer have to fit on a certain bookshelf in a store in every city in the world. I don't fit on one bookshelf. My story, my family, as Sam always said, he's the round peg in the square hole of school and life. And I made that kid. I'm the original, you know, weirdo. So I feel like having this book gives some validation to those of us in the world that don't fit in one particular place. And, you know, to look at the book, How Much Is Enough? You're thinking, oh, is this a Marie Kondo knockoff? Am I going to tell you how to fold your underwear in your drawers? No, I'm not. It's not that at all.
Make sure they fit.
No, it's not that at all. But it's not what you think. No. And as you read the book, and you can read it, by the way, in no particular order. That's the other thing that confounds publishers. You can open the book and just read it anywhere. I had one guy say to me in a bookstore event, it's the perfect toilet book, which I actually took as a compliment. I thought that was good. Because I said to him, anything that gets you off your technology on the toilet, I'm all for, you know, so it was fine that he said that. You know, compliments come in strange packages, David. They really
in a lot of different ways. Yeah. I see that. Okay, yep. so you spent a lot of time thinking about this enough concept, right? You wrote this whole book. It's not a short book. It's you wrote this whole book about enough. So are there places? Well, you just said, you know, there's 23, but 22 chapters of topics of enough. So are there things, though, that seem like, let's say somebody really wanted to take this seriously and say, geez, you know, I really do need to prune down in my life. Are there places where you ended up feeling like these are most important? It would be most important for somebody to reorient themselves along these dimensions.
Yeah, that's a tough question, because the one thing I didn't want to do is position myself as an expert. I think this is a very personal journey, not dissimilar to religion or love. You know, I think we all kind of go on this journey of asking ourselves how much is enough in all aspects of our life. And depending on where you are in your life, you know, sometimes debating the concept of enough money might be more important to one person, but then debating the concept of childhood. How much is enough of your childhood story that you need to carry into adulthood? How much of your life do you need to live as a victim of your childhood? Enough with the childhood story. You're 50 years old, you're 40 years old, you're 30 years old. It's time to write the new story. So I think depending on where you are and what you're struggling with in life, reading this book is going to give you a whole new framework for that.
That's interesting. I didn't expect that answer. I mean, I grew up fat in a very fat family, and the endless struggle of every relative I could see up and down the family line, you know, it was the weight family. Oh, fat enough, I'm not thin enough, I'm not like this enough. That really stood out. I wonder about that. I wonder if there are nodes that, if people stopped caring as much about, you get a bigger bang for your buck.
You hit the big one, David. I mean, the beauty chapter is, I think, one of the more profound chapters for me. I talk in there about something I hear a lot of women in my age and stage of life complain about, which is feeling invisible in society. But actually, I see that as a superpower, because at my age and stage of life, I don't need a stranger on the street wolf whistling me for me to feel or value my beauty. I don't need to be told 100 times a day that I'm beautiful. I don't need to measure my look against somebody's on Instagram or other social media. I can look and feel beautiful without anybody seeing me. And that is my superpower as a 67-year-old woman in this world today, where so many of my contemporaries are so filled with negative self-talk about their bodies. It's enough, David. It's enough. It's enough to look in the mirror and feel grateful that we're here. That's enough. We don't have to micro-criticize every part of our body. I'm not having it. I'm really not.
Yeah. That stands out to me as, I mean, it was just, maybe it's just my own personal, my family, right? You know, but it, you hear it so much. One hears it so much.
Yes.
You know, I love my wife and I think she looks wonderful, but she doesn't see with my eyes. And so, it's really like, are you kidding? everybody wants to be what they're not.
But why, David? Why can't we be enough? Why can't we say, I have enough money, I have enough beauty, I have enough food, I have, you know, enough. It's a concept that I'm extremely passionate about. And that's why every chapter, every 20 of these 22 chapters has a lot of me in there. I like really thought a lot about mm-hmm. this, how it applies to me. And I don't think I'm that unique. I think I'm pretty typical. I think most people are having these conversations. They might not have ever had them out loud.
Yes, I think that's right. I think that's exactly right. There's that dialogue going on frequently. Are there things? Are there places where you still, for lack of a better word, struggle with the enoughness? Like, you know, are there places where, okay, I'm still working on feeling like it's enough of that?
Oh, or, of course. I mean, I'm only human, David.
Where are you now, a specimen under museum glass? Now you're perfect.
No. I mean, I'm a work in progress, just like you, just like your listeners. You know, this book, again, not positioning myself as an expert in any way, but as somebody that's on this enough journey, and I'm inviting you to join me with these questions. Let them be rhetorical. Yeah. You don't ever have to have a conversation with anybody about them, but let these questions and these prompts be something that gives you an opportunity for self-reflection and gives you a chance to take this journey. And it's a learning process, just like every other aspect of our life. I've always thought of myself as a student of my life. And this is just one of my textbooks, you know?
See, I think of you as you have always been introspective. Maybe more at certain times than others, but are you bumping into, are you meeting people who that's a new thing for them? You know, just I never thought about, et cetera, et cetera. Are you meeting that? Are you know, that opening that up for people?
That's a really good question, David. Yes, because I think in certain patriarchal societies, certain family structures, these kinds of topics are not shared. We're not talking about if you're having enough sex. We're not talking about if you have enough beauty. We're not talking about if your marriage is done. You know, have you had enough of your marriage? That's a heavy conversation that people are afraid to have. A lot of women my age have made a deal. They feel they don't want to be alone, and so they're going to put up whatever mishigas is coming their way just so they're not alone. Well, that's not the path I chose to take. I ended my marriage after 30 years because I felt that I was equal parts too young and too old. You know, I was young enough to see that I had a whole bunch of life ahead of me and that I didn't want to represent love this way to my children. I was old enough to know better and to know that this was not a quality of life that I wanted any longer. And so I think this is an internal conversation people are having, but it's time to get, I think, more honest with ourselves. If we learned anything from the pandemic, David, it's that life is short and unpredictable. So why waste time with this punitive self-talk? Let's have a positive impact on our lives, right?
That was a very moving thing to read. And less because of the particulars and more just because of the raw honesty. I really appreciated that.
Thank you.
That facing that challenge. So,
And in the spirit of the very best comedy. In the spirit of the very best comedy coming from truth, right? Like I tell some very serious and intense truths. I talk about my divorce. I talk about the role addiction played in our family. I talk about helping my dad end his life. I mean, I'm talking about true life and death issues. But there's a lot of humor in this book too. I wouldn't call it, you're not gonna find it in the humor aisle, but this is the lens that I look at life, David. Even the darkest, most difficult struggles, even when Sam got sick and was in a wheelchair, there was time to find laughter, even in the midst of our pain. And that's, I cannot stress how important that is in life.
You may have found a territory right there where there's no such thing as enough. There's not enough good humor in the world.
There's not enough humor.
Yucks, but.
No, it's not about telling jokes. It's about looking at life. Yeah, it's looking at life with twisted optimism. You know, it's trying to find the good and sometimes the silly in really difficult situations. It's why my favorite source of news is Jon Stewart, right? Late night talk show monologues. I find that news is revealed in a way that is very digestible, palatable, and ultimately entertaining, which is what I need right now in the world of politics.
And no less honest and serious. It's just really well told.
Yes, using humor as the ultimate communication tool to tell these very hard truths. And I tried to do the same with the book, you know.
Mm-hmm. What's left on Claire Berger's bucket list? I mean, you haven't had enough of everything, right?
No, alive. I've never had enough. I'm not done. No, I'm not. I mean, I'm just so grateful to be sitting here talking to you, David, because of our history and, you know, first meeting you as Sam's, you know, director of Sam's school and everything we went through with my son and the fact that he's healthy today, the fact that my daughter's so fully launched in her career and in her life and that she wants me to live with her. I mean, who asked their adult, child asks? I know. But you know what, David, it really works, you know? But what do I not have enough of in my life? I never can have enough friends. And, you know, I moved to New York. I knew one person. And so I'm really on the market to make friends. I really, there's not enough friends for me. I'm always looking. This book tour has been a great opportunity for me to meet new people. And I hope friendships will come of it. I'm single. I'm just putting it out there, David. I don't have enough romantic love in my life. And I don't know that anybody has turned your podcast into a dating app, but I'm going to do that right now and say that anybody listening,
all I have to do is leave a comment, below, and I'll make sure you get it.
Hey, baby, ClaireBerger.com. I'm all over it.
That's like, there you go.
Yeah. And let me just debunk.
If you want to contact Claire.
Yes. Let me debunk that popular misconception.
What are you going to debunk?
That a women's sex drive decrease with age. Not true. Not true. It's all about the partnership. That's all.
Does anybody?
I can't speak for everybody, just myself.
Well, that's not all you said. I read that.
Well, yeah. You have to read the book, David. Yeah. You have to read the book.
You have to read the book.
Right.
Well, what else do you want to say about the book? What else do you want to say about the book?
Yeah, I want.
Like,
I really,
we're going to stop right now, which who knows?
What
do you want people to know about?
I really want people to know that I wrote the book to start a conversation. I did not have the aspiration of getting on the New York Times bestseller list. I want to write this book to have conversations either with me and you, or with each other. And I think this book is a very unique vehicle to start conversations, whether it's through book clubs, community centers. You know, there are so many organized groups in this world, but not enough. There are not enough. You know, if you're a member of the 12-step community, you have that magnificent organization and that template and that framework. If you are active in your kids' schools, you're part of the PTA. If you're a religious person, perhaps you're part of a church or a temple, you have that community. But I still think there are not enough communities where people can gather and discuss these things. So I hope my book is that.
Have you been invited? I mean, that sounds like a really good idea. Have you been invited to any book clubs who, like, you know, hey, we read your book and we want you to show up?
Yes, and I want to do more. I did one in Carmel, a live in-person one, and a woman came up to me and said, my sister is in New Zealand. She's got a really good book club. Can you Zoom in and do that one? I said, yes, absolutely. I will Zoom into your book club. I'm on a six-month book tour right now across the country. If I'm anywhere near your book club, I will come. And do the club with you, because I am a facilitator as well. I can facilitate these conversations but you don't need me in the room. You know, I think the book is really the ignition for the conversation. It's the lighter fluid. It will get things started.
So, you know, pulling back the curtain just slightly, but so how's the book doing? You're on a 6-month book tour.
I'm on.
That's amazing.
Well, I'll tell you why I'm on a 6-month book tour. My kids are doing a full gut reno on our brownstone. I got nowhere to live. So they said, you know, well, I'm telling you, I am literally living my enough thesis here, David. So they said, look, we'll get you another apartment. I said, no, I want to hit the road with my book. So I blocked out the next 6 months and I'm staying with friends and family. And I've picked key, you know, cities that I love that I think would be responsive to the book. And so the book tour is an opportunity for me to spend real quality time with friends and family in beautiful parts of the country and to chat my face off about this book. It's just a real synergistic opportunity for me. Yeah.
And where can people get it? We know they can get it online, Amazon or wherever, right?
Anywhere that you buy books. It's if you just go to clareberger.com, you can see there's links to, you know, all the independent sites, Barnes & Noble, Apple Books, of course, Amazon. Anywhere you choose to buy it, I'm begging your listeners to leave a review. The reviews are the lifeblood for independent authors like myself. We don't have the muscle and the power and the publicity arm of a big-time publisher. Yep. So those reviews have everything to do with a bookstore placement, national media exposure, that kind of thing. So I really beg your listeners to post reviews. Honest, I will never tell you what.
That's a good thing to know.
Yeah, it's really, really important. Yeah. So
yeah, I didn't
can't pretend
that. I know
a lot about algorithming, but it moves up. It moves the writer up in the algorithm world. I mix our SEO that much sexier, so you know it's all that stuff.
It's one of those words that now everybody uses, and 90% of the people have no idea what the hell.
No. I'm in the 90%. If you ask me to specifically like draw a picture of an algorithm, I don't know what
an algorithm.
I just know I need one. I know I need it. I need a good one. That's all I know.
You need it to be better.
Yeah. I need an algorithm and I need a man, David. Oh. Can you help me with either one of those?
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
I'm enjoying making you blush.
No idea,
Did I just say that?
I think putting it out there like that is a good thing to do.
What do I have to lose? I mean, really? Come on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Send comments and pictures to Claire Burkle.
Preferably clothed. Thank you very much. Appreciate clothes.
Yeah, you don't want dick pics.
No. But speaking of embarrassing my children, I would just like to say that my kids do endorse this book. They have been really, really supportive. And that's meant the world to me. Because, you know, coming up in the world as a stand-up, they were always my North Star. It's not that I ran everything by them, but I thought about them with intentionality when I wrote jokes and when I performed. Right. And I absolutely thought a lot about them when I wrote this book too. And yes, it's honest and yes, it's personal, but I really know that it does not embarrass my children in any way. They gave me their stamp of approval. Right. There's things they didn't know and need to know. But I said, look, skip the sex chapter. You don't need to read that. That's the beauty of this book. And I'm sure they didn't read that. At least I hope they didn't read that chapter.
You gave them an autographed copy, then you tore out that chapter.
I tore that chapter out. Yes,
there you go.
I did a whole bunch of live events in LA, and Sam was really great to come with me and shoot video and take the money. I mean, he was really helpful. And I said, do me a favor, don't show up in Culver City. We're doing the sex and love chapter, and you really don't want to be there. He's like, you're right. I really don't want to be there. So I appreciated him not coming to that event. So that was
Isn't it funny?
Yeah.
It's still that. Yeah.
I think it boils down to respect, David. Like, I don't need to know about my kids' sex lives, and they don't need to know about mine. And, you know, the one thing people say to me,
let
you're
me tell
living
you about
with your
kids.
Don't tell me. I don't want. Oh, my God. I mean, the more, you know, the more time, the older they get and the older I get, the obviously the more honest we are with each other. And, you know, Sam was the drummer, and he now, like just last year, told me stories about things that happened in the dressing rooms of the Roxy, you know, and the Whiskey and all the places. I'm like, I'm really glad you didn't tell me that stuff when you were in high school. I really didn't need to know that then. So thanks for that. Appreciate it.
Yeah. And you're grounded. And by the way, you're grounded.
Yeah, right. Your 34-year-old ass is grounded. It's grounded. You go back to your own apartment that you paid for with your own money, and you sit there and think about it. Right? Okay, Mom, I will.
Well. Well, Claire, it's lovely to spend time. It's always fun. It's always fun. And yeah. I really love that you wrote this book, and I hope it does ragingly well in all the ways you want. And if not, it'll be enough. So
yeah,
whatever.
It is. It's already enough that I've been able to reconnect with you. And for the listeners that may not be aware, you are actually in the book. You're in the education chapter. You didn't even know that before I hocked you into letting me do this podcast with you. So this isn't like I really am glad you're in there, because I can't thank you enough, David, for everything that you did for Sam when he was at New Roads.
And I read that, and it's very touching. It is. It's nice to feel appreciated. Thank you.
Deeply.
And
deeply.
Yeah. Well, there it is. Anything else you want to say?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, David. So nice to see you, and happy to touch base with your listeners through this lovely podcast. Thank you.
And don't hang up yet.
I won't.
And thank you. But thank you for coming.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.